We are happy to have Mr. Banky Banks over here. How are you, man?
Hey, it's great, Jason, to be back here in WERS.
You're playing the Western Front.
Yeah, that's tomorrow and Saturday.
You played, what was it, about a month ago, 2 months ago that you were down at the Western Front?
Uh-huh.
And it was amazing.
Yeah, we really got a good turnout, a good vibe, good response.
But that club, though, that room just has such a great vibe to it, really.
Yeah, I love it. It's small, but it's perfect place, you know, good ambience, you know.
Nice owner, that guy Marvin.
Marvin upstate on stage with his maracas.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's great. Great place. Great people.
So you're touring now in support, or doing shows now in support of Island Boy.
Yeah, the Island Boy CD. Album CD, yes.
Available. You can pick it up in Taurus Records.
Yeah, Taurus, yeah.
You'll hear more of that music a little bit later. You're from Anguilla, right? Tell us a little bit about Anguilla.
Anguilla, small island in the Caribbean, beautiful, flat.
So what's it near for us?
Lots of beaches. Very close to St. Martin, about 9 miles from St. Martin. You take a ferry, it's like 10-15 minutes. Close by to St. Thomas, I would say. It's about half an hour by plane.
How long from Boston?
From Boston.
How long would it take me to get there right now?
Right now? Well, I would say about 4 hours. From Kennedy, it's like 3.5 hours.
When do we leave?
We leave for Moon's Flash next week.
So Moon's Flash, another thing. Moon's Flash next week happening.
Yeah, the 16th in Anguilla, you know, on Sandy Island. The 18th on St. Bart, which is a French island in the Caribbean, which is neighboring Anguilla, which is very close to Anguilla too. And the 19th on Pinel Island, which is in St. Martin. These are like wild concerts something I started to do years ago on moonlight nights on deserted islands. I came back from Europe and I was kind of bored of the normal auditorium, concert hall, nightclubs. I said, let's do something wild and straight and funny. So one day I just got on a boat, just put all the equipment in the boat and just took it to an island where nobody lives, took some generators, set up a stage and just played. And it's really caught on and we managed to really put together a small Moonsplash tour this year, which we hope to really do, make a real thing in the Caribbean and anywhere else, maybe to Boston.
people really don't feel like they can let go and be totally free and wild in a club, not only in a club, but in a big arena or something. I guess being outside, especially being on a deserted island in the middle of the Caribbean.
And there's just water around you. There's nothing but water, man.
Nothing. Nobody's going to mess with you there.
Nobody's going to mess. You just have a good time, you know.
So you have other bands play?
Yeah, this time we're going to have the Andy Marvel band from New York, a local band called North Sound. And I'm taking down my band from New York, which is the same band that comes to Western Front, the boys. Junior on guitar, Robert Mandelson bass.
It's a potpourri of cultures too, people from all over the place.
Huh? The band?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the rhythm section are all Jamaicans, I would say that. But living in New York, you know.
Yeah.
Chris is the drummer, Neville, the keyboard player, Jamaican living in the Bronx.
And the bass player.
The bass player is from Africa.
Yeah, he's wild. I spoke to him at the Western Front.
Yeah, Rob, he's a great guy. So we're looking forward to the Western Front, and it's pretty busy weeks ahead, you know, from here. We go back down to the Moonsplash on the 16th.
There's a new album, I know. It's a lot of reggae on it, a little bit of folk. You get into all the different styles, but for the first time now, I've gotten to listen to some of your older stuff that's no longer. It's hard to get. It's difficult. It's collector's item.
Yeah, it's just because the records were out of print now, and I'm planning to put them back out, a lot of them back out on CD, like Terrestrial Spirits, which is the album just before Island Boy, which is still an album which is very much in demand. And I'd like to put it out again. Maybe I'd add some other stuff with it, you know, and put it out very soon.
The title track, Terrestrial Spirits, is a really hot song. That was what year? What year was Terrestrial Spirits?
Terrestrial Spirits came out in like 89. But I wrote Terrestrial Spirits, that song, when I came back from Europe. I've been living in Europe for like three and a half, four years. And I came home. This was the first song I wrote. Just coming home and being out there with the nature, you know, Terrestrial Spirits with the earth, the ocean, the smell of the earth, you know. And just coming back home, I just wanted to just be a part of nature.
So does having your senses so in tune mm-hmm. with nature and the islands, does that really wreck your whole vibe when you come to New York? Or can you get into the, the feel of that also.
Yeah, I just close my eyes sometimes and just think of little flashes of blue, you know, here and there. And you can put your mind there. I mean, it's difficult, but if you've got a strong enough mind, you can put yourself right to, you can take yourself to any place.
The only time you're going to see blue ocean around here is you look in the encyclopedia.
I just close my eyes, you know, and there's a little space of blue that I just save, reserve for myself.
Yeah, we really, there's a way. I mean, but even with music, you can bring yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Use your subconscious mind and bring yourself.
Definitely.
I try to do it here when I'm in the studios. We try to pick up some sort of that tropics feel in the show. Yeah.
But, I suppose. But nature in general, it doesn't have to be tropics. Nature is beautiful everywhere. In the mountains, you know, you can pick up that. You can just go to the mountain, man, go to the mountaintop and just breathe that fresh air. And there's a lot of spirit up there, you know.
Back here with Banky Banks, that song was Terrestrial Spirits, inspired by the whole nature of the world and of the earth and everything like that. Right.
That's it.
Okay, Banky, about your tour. You've done some headlining tours, some support tours, but your biggest thing you were talking about was
Jimmy Cliff, that Jimmy Cliff tour in 85. It was like a 20-city tour in Europe. It was awesome, huge tour, like trailer loads of lights alone, stage and stuff.
And just tons of people at every
tons
show.
Tons of people and just fun every night, you know.
I'm sure everybody shows up for a Jimmy Cliff show whenever he's in town.
Yeah, we did a lot of nice towns in France. A lot of people were all the way into it.
You know, when I think of Paris or when I think of France, I reggae is like the last thing that comes to my mind. So how do they respond?
They love it. I think in Europe they love new things. They are open to, they're a lot more open in a lot of ways than Americans are, I think, or even the English are, to stuff like jazz. Like, jazz music is like almost, in America, it's not respected, it's not regarded very highly. But in Europe, in France, in the south of France, and it's very, people respect and support, you know, these art forms.
The arty music forms.
Yeah, they support it very much.
In America, people are very into this stuff that you can just grab hold of right there.
Yeah.
It's right there. Mm-hmm. I know that.
So reggae is like that, was like that. Reggae's always, was always good in Europe, you know.
And they sell, I mean, with the popular bands, Jimmy Cliff is popular, they probably sell a lot of records.
Oh, of course they sell a lot of records there.
And now you live in the United States and you play a lot around here. Mm-hmm. And in New York, you know, I see you send me the ads, you play a lot of clubs around New York. Mm-hmm. Those must be smaller, more intimate, and like probably darker than other places. Huh? That's what I would think. That was what the impression I'd get. With
New York? Well, New York is a very special personality. It's a town. It's different, you know. There are all kinds of clubs in New York. They're little dingy places.
You got to start off playing the dingy places.
Yeah. Of course, it's
Before
Wetlands.
You can move to the Ritz.
Wetlands is a great club. It's small, but it's very, very, very nice club, very intimate, very good mood, you know, good feeling, you know. We played quite a few of the clubs there. Kilimanjaro, which is a little bigger club.
Oh, well, we have a Kilimanjaro DJ here.
You do?
Yeah, I think it's a takeoff on the original
yeah, I
New
think
York.
I think the original is in Washington, D.C. The New York Kilimanjaro is closed now. We did that. But
it seems that these clubs are dropping like flies.
Yeah, clubs just come and go. Seems that way.
So does it seem like, is it a discouraging thing for a musician who's on the up and up and, you know, working and looking for places to play in any place that's really...
When a club falls?
Yeah.
Well, clubs go, but people always want to go out. Another one comes around. They start 6 months, goes, another one comes.
You're not discouraged by how the music scene is so fickle.
Well, you can't afford to be discouraged by that. You just have to keep on doing whatever you're doing, you know, because just roll with it.
Because it's life. It's,
oh, yeah, it's not.
It's what's happening. Uh-huh. You put out your first album in 76, and that was when you converted to Rastafari.
Not completely converted. I never converted completely to anything.
No. Well, I didn't mean anything.
Yes. No, it's all right. It's fine. I'm... 76, yeah, that's
when.
If
you can
talk
about it, feel free.
Yeah, that's when I, 76, I was just looking for, somehow we grew up in a Christian society, and we don't get, there's something that's lacking, something which is there's some kind of a hypocrisy with it to some extent. We go to church, And we go to Sunday school, and we go to prayer meeting, we come out, and we see the priest, and we see whoever, and we see people that wake up in the morning and go to church. And before they go to church, they curse and they quarrel. And they come back and they quarrel. They go in to drink the wine and they come back.
So you were missing something.
So yeah. I said, this could not be right. There's got to be something deeper than that. This is more like just talk, you know. There's something deeper than that. So we search within ourselves and see if we can find the truth about God or whatever. So we keep on searching. And there came a Rastafari, something which was different. And something which seemed to be all right. And I picked up some of the ways of the Rasta man, you know. And I think the Rastafari has brought on the Caribbean together in a lot of ways better than most things. Most of the things that have been tried in the Caribbean to bring people together, the only combining force, you know, in the Caribbean for young people in, say, the last 15, 20 years, was Rastafari.
Do you think that's been brought on by music, by the reggae music?
Yeah, this was brought on a lot by Bob Marley, you know, what he said.
Everybody needs like a spiritual leader. Why not make it a musician?
Something? Yeah. So for me, I mean, I'm not into religion or anything like that. You don't have to give God a name for me. You know, God is always there. And God is within everybody. It's the spirit that flows like a river goes through everybody, you know?
You grew up, when you started doing music, mm-hmm. How old were you when you picked up your first guitar?
I would say about 9 years. I started.
And what were your plans? What were your plans before you realized you wanted to be a musician?
Well, I was always writing and talking poetry and stuff like that. I always liked music. I remember at a very early age of just standing in my mother's kitchen door and just creating stuff in my head, songs, and just beating the door and just feeling like I'm in front of a big orchestra and conducting and arrangements going through my head and stuff like that.
Really?
And then I love music. I grew up in a family. I sung in the choir, church, and stuff like that in Sunday school. I was in the boys' choir. And then there was a guitar in my home, you know. But I didn't really get a chance to play a lot of it because I had three brothers. So I made my first guitar, really, the guitar that I really learned to play on, I made it myself.
Wow.
With a school friend. And, So I made my guitar, and I learned a few chords from my brother taught me a few chords, like C, G.
Your older brother monopolized the household guitar.
Yeah.
Is he any other musicians in your family?
No, he's a banker now. Oh. They're all great brothers. They're great, because he was very instrumental in me when I started my career and really telling me, like, what is giving me, like, advice. You know, you should do this, you shouldn't do that.
I think it's really something in blood, because I have musicians in my family, and some, you know, some people have it, and some people feel it, and some people just don't.
My sister, but she's dead now, was a very good musician also. She was a guitarist and singer.
So you can feel it. You have it in you.
She actually picked it up from me, my sister. She used to follow me around. And after a while, I said, okay. When I got in the band, I decided to play bass. I said, well, I need somebody to come. So I taught her to play the guitar so I could play bass, right? And she became a very, very good musician also. She was a good singer.
Do you play bass anymore? You stick strictly with, like, rhythm guitar and acoustic guitar?
Well, I never played in the band anymore.
Oh.
And a lot of my studio stuff, I did it years back, like on the Sooty Soul album. The Remember Bob album, I did all the bass on that album. Yeah, and I also did keyboards.
Oh.
Yeah.
But now you have a traveling keyboard player.
Yeah, so now I just relax and lay back and play the guitar, which I really started to compose with now. You know, from the very beginning, I always started with an acoustic guitar.
Well, it's Banky Banks that we're talking to, in case you just tuned in. And Remember Bob was a good one. We can play that one right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
that give you a taste of my bass playing.
Oh, you played
bass? I played bass and keyboards on that album.
And that was 1982.
This was recorded in the HG's Montserrat. It's not one of my best albums as far as technically.
But you know, it's the soul. It's not always the technical stuff.
Yeah.
It's the whole vibe of the
I always saw that you know, sometimes you go in the studio and it never sounds better than the demo. The demo always sounds better to you.
Right, and then when you press it a million times and you're like, wait a minute. There's something wrong here.
Maybe it's just me.
But it's too late by then. I mean, nobody's...
You listen and tell me what you think.
Oh, okay, definitely. Well, this is a Remember Bob. Banky Banks, Remember Bob. Bob Marley. I don't think anybody will ever come along that will have quite the impact on the world that he has. So I guess you've had a real, he's had a real impact on your life.
Oh,
thank
Bob Marley. He really, I mean, before I heard Bob Marley, I listened to reggae, I listened to Jimmy Cliff, I listened to Toots and the Maytals. I liked it and respected the music. But I never really got that gut feeling or that this is the, would be the music that I would be doing, you know, because I grew up listening to, in the Caribbean at that time, you listened to American Top 40, English Top 40, R&B, little calypso here and there, some reggae, you know, and so I had many influences, you know. You know,
and then R&B,
rock. And then I heard Bob. I said, shh, this is...
What did you say? You said,
this is great. This yeah. is great stuff. I mean, it was like, at the time, it was like in 74, 75 when I heard that stuff.
And
I
it
said,
really...
this is great. He really does. Just what I... It really appealed to me, really, in a very strong way because it, I could relate to it, the blues and the R&B influences in Bob Marley. You know, and still the very hard reggae, you know, backbeat and drums and bass.
Well, here at Thursday Rockers, you know, you never, we carry ourselves on Bob's vibe here.
Oh, yeah, you can take, that can take you around the world and back.
You've heard, we were talking about the new Bob Double CD, mm-hmm. which is quite interesting, some rock steady and some different stuff.
Yeah.
That really shows people where the roots of that whole thing came from.
Yeah, people need to know that. There's a lot of people who need to know that.
So is that something you heard before or after you... You heard the regular reggae that people normally, you know, the popular Bob.
Yeah, I heard the ska, I heard all that stuff. That was the stuff that I heard the popular Bob. I heard, you see, at that time, before Bob Marley and Cliff and those guys came to the scene, the Jamaican music was there, but it was easy to get a reggae record in London than to get it in the Caribbean at that time.
Because everything was, because that was where the mass market was.
Yeah, of course.
People you know, weren't buying in the
only way you get, the only way you'd get a be able to pick up a reggae record in the Caribbean is students would go to Jamaica to college, university or college to come home with a record, the fresh stuff, and you'd pick it up, you know, you get it. You know, but it was not like now we can buy reggae music anywhere in the world, you know.
And what about shows? What kind of shows did you see? Were there any shows that you think of now when you're up on stage? Any musicians that you think of?
You mean even, from my childhood?
Yeah, any people that you really, not that you try to emulate, because I know that, you know, it's all individual, but.
Yeah, I saw the Jimmy Cliff show, I loved it.
You saw that many times.
I mean, I'm talking about even before I saw him in Europe.
Oh, you saw him before you toured with him?
Yeah, yeah.
So that must have been quite a thrill.
It was a thrill to be working, to be on the same bill with Jimmy.
Did the thrill wear off, or was it like a constant buzz all the way through?
Right, it was a great buzz. I knew I was tired after the tour.
Oh, so man.
Exhausted. But, Jimmy was... I remember listening to Jimmy's stuff. I was really, really young on this very small record player.
A little plastic
thing that plays with the battery. And you put a 45 on it. And to get the words, we used to just put if it's a 45, you put it back to 33. Is that right? So it'd be playing slow, and you hear all the words.
So you can understand all the words.
And listen, and you could hear the guitar parts of bass lines and stuff.
And then
like
did you play this stuff?
Oh, we played. We used to cover that stuff in the bands I used to work with as a bass player at that time.
Oh, so you started off as a cover, doing reggae covers.
Yes.
Your band still does that. I remember I was blown away by your guitarist and his singing.
Yeah, always try to.
When he does the Bob songs before the show starts.
Yeah, that's part of the thing.
What sort of attitude was kept on the whole Jimmy Cliff tour? Because I can't really picture what that would be like touring with somebody that's a legend like that. I mean, there must have been truckloads and busloads of people and equipment and everything like that just cruising across the
Europe. It was awesome. It was a whole lot of gear, a whole lot of fans, a whole lot of people, a whole different experience, you know.
and it gave you a real good feeling of the whole music scene.
A really good feeling. For me, that was the best sound, biggest and the best sound system I ever worked on. it was the best of everything.
And did they take care of you? Because I know occasionally, you know, they don't take care of the opening act.
We were treated very well. We were treated very well by Jimmy. I still have a very good rapport with with Jimmy. I can call him anytime.
That's always a good connection, I guess.
He always works. He always get all access to his concerts.
If we'll have Jimmy Cliff's phone number here for you if anybody wants to call 578-8890.
Oh, really?
Shake that mic around.
Oh, shake it around.
So it's Banky Banks on WERS. We're just having a really good time, you know. And we might as well play one of the new songs.
All right.
There's one with that Spanish guitar.
Sheba.
All right. And the guitar, was it a guest guitar player sitting in on that, or was that?
No, this is a very good friend of mine, Jimmy Graham. He's now living in Japan.
Doing reggae in Japan, or what does he do?
Well, he went to Japan. He does reggae there, yeah. He works over there. He's been over there for years.
Have you been there?
Never really. Most of the people who work with me go to Japan off and on. A lot of my musicians sometimes.
That seems like a strange place to go when you're in the reggae business.
But I think it's reggae is done very well there.
Wow, that's
good. Yeah, reggae is this band school there. So every month, every week, bands are going there. They do extensive clubs. They get booked for like weeks. It's a big deal now. Bands, reggae bands going to Japan. Music in general in Japan, you know, but reggae is also getting a good thing there.
Well, I'm glad to see that it's spreading the world over.
Oh, yeah.
That's excellent. So we'll hear this song, Sheba. It's got a nice little Spanish guitar thing happening in the beginning, but then it really kicks in and grooves. So, and it's WERS here with Banky Banks playing tomorrow night and Saturday night at the Western Front. Hopefully our good friend Marvin will come up and do his little maracas solo.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for Marvin.
They are really nice people over at the Western Front, too.
Hey, Marvin, how you doing?
Yeah, Marvin treats us really good.
Cook some of that good food.
Yeah, they got good food over there. We'll have to check
out. Yeah, the boys in the band are wild and waiting for that stuff.
Waiting for some Red Stripe, too. You drink orange juice while you're playing, right?
Yeah.
That's the best thing.
And sky juice.
Sky juice?
Water.
Well, let's get to this song. It's Sheba. Banky Banks in the studio today. Jason here. A song called Sheba from Island Boy. And it's Banky Banks here in the studio with us again.
Yeah. Actually, Sheba is a song I wrote way back in the 81. I tried it in several different formats, different styles. You know,
like what, different intros and.
I've always been the same kind of intro. No, not exactly. No, it didn't have that Spanish intro. The song has a Spanish kind of flair, anyhow, right? But the style of reggae. I mean, there are different styles of reggae that you can play, you know. And I always try to record. Every time I go to the studio, I recorded in '82 when I did the Soothe Your Soul album, and I wasn't happy with it, so I just didn't put it in the album. I recorded it again later on in 83.
And it didn't do it for you?
It didn't do it for me. I hated it. I recorded it for Terrestrial Spirits album. And it actually is the same version that we have right now. But it just didn't, for some reason, I wasn't that happy with it.
You didn't think it flowed with the whole album?
Didn't think it flowed with the whole album. It just didn't, you know. So then when I did Island Boy, I said, okay, well, let's check it out. And after going back and listening to like 2 years after down the line.
So that is the same version?
That's the version you hear now on Island Boy. So it's interesting. It took a while before I could feel comfortable about it to put it out. But I think the treatment it got, you know, Spanish guitar and whatnot is the way it should be. It's the best I could do with it.
How many ears does it go by before it makes it to an album? I know you're like the last word because it's your name all over it. But
well, most of my stuff so far, Island Boy has been, I produced that all the way. It's the album that I really.
So that was your creation?
My creation. I mean, I take advice from people around me. I have a co-producer, Bob Sittenberg, and I listen to musicians. It's not like my word is the last word. It's like, we throw out things with musicians, with the people I work with, and people around me, you know.
You let your studio musicians or your live musicians or whoever might be working with you help out. And
we give input. I listen to them, and I think about it. And, I mean, of course, I have the last word, some of it, most of it. But I take into consideration, you know.
Have you ever worked with an outside producer, maybe somebody who's tried to take an upper hand on your creativity?
Yeah, I've done that. I've done some of that.
You weren't into it?
I would love to do that. I was always, at one point in my life, I was, that was just what I needed. I just wanted somebody to find someone who would take my stuff and I could just lay back. I figured that that's what I needed. Just lay back and just let it roll, you know, somebody to give me direction.
You wanted to be a rock star.
Not really a rock star. I just felt that, okay, let me just pull myself back away from the music and just let somebody do that for me and just try to listen to somebody. But I don't think it worked for me. You know, I have to be involved because I create the stuff. I compose the music. You know, it starts on the acoustic guitar in a room. On the beach, in the mountaintop, in the boat.
I know, don't remind us. Come on, I know.
And it starts like that, and I get so close to the stuff, you know, I have to take it all the way, you know, because I have so many different styles and ways of putting across stuff, and I think the music is very delicate and very unique.
So I feel like, especially with the cross of folk and rock and reggae, it's incredibly unique.
So I kind of know what I want to do, you know. Some people hear it as something that maybe should be going straight into reggae. Some people hear it as something that maybe should be going straight into folk or rock or whatnot. I hear it as just something which is just unique and different, you know. And I think I made a mistake by really thinking that somebody else could really. I could depend on somebody else to really do it for me. I have to be very close to all the stuff that I do. I mean, I take advice, you know, and I like input.
But you're there every step of the way through
I'm
production.
I'm there every step of the way. Production. I'm the last person to leave the studio at 6 o'clock in the morning and go for breakfast, you know.
I know. How come it always ends up that all musicians are always doing their recording and everything like that from like 8 at night to like 7 in the morning?
Because I think I like the dark. For working, you know, if I go to the studio with it's day and night, I turn the lights off. I turn the lights down.
Keep
off.
It down. Oh yeah, down. Right here. You could tell. Look up. The lights are real low.
So I like to do that, and I seem as though I get more vibes. I get more in tune to what I'm doing. I can really focus on what I'm doing, and I get more into it. You know.
Get like candles going, incense burning over you.
Yeah,
you get that whole vibe.
Yeah, that's the way I record all my vocals and stuff like that.
And you keep it a very, like your whole band is very, when you're all together in the studio, there aren't a whole lot of outsiders, right?
Well, some depends on what we're doing. You know, if you're laying like basic tracks, which are like drums and keyboards, basic tracks, really, we record live, almost live. Like, I go in.
You don't do 100 overdubs on your vocals?
No, I do. Normally, my vocals are one take.
Wow.
And one take, which is like most people call it the scratch vocal. I go and plug in with the drummer, the bass player, maybe a piano, and my acoustic guitar. I plug in, I go in one room, and I sing and play. Most times, we take that take. That's the best.
Right.
That's what we take. My first vocal. So it's kind of like a live feel. And then, and maybe it may clean up. Maybe I would redo after the track is done. We may redo the lead guitar, the guitar, my guitar, because it will have traces of my vocal which leak in. So may do that again if it's, you know, if I can get it done as good as.
If you can do it in the first take, if you could do the whole thing in the first take,
I do it. A lot of the stuff is done like that. Like Island Boy, is like all like, go in and do it live. Go in and sing the vocal and play the acoustic guitar, and then later on we do the overdubs, like lead guitars and maybe some keys or whatever.
Well, isn't that how most of it was done in the old Studio One? And
yeah, that's the way it was done, and that's the way I still like to work. I hate to like
overproduce.
Normally, what people do is go in the studio, put a scratch vocal, and then at the very end, when everything is on and perfect, they go and do the lead vocal. You know, with me. The core of the thing is what I do, as far as I'm concerned. You know, so I like to get my vocal, or whatever I'm doing, get the vibe, get the live feeling of that, and then everything builds around that.
Do you feel? Does your voice usually hold up throughout the whole thing? Do you ever have any? You know, never have any vocal trouble?
I've never had in the studio. I never had vocal trouble. Most of my takes are one take or two takes in the studio. I never had problems in the studio for. Because I'm so well rehearsed. I'm a solo kind of player. You know, I can take my guitar. I'm always rehearsing. I can take my guitar anytime and do the whole set.
Well, next time you're here, I hope you have a guitar and a band. April, Live Music Week. We'd like to see you in here playing some of that music live on the radio, WERS.
Definitely.
Thank you, Banks.
That's where he's at.
And your band, you have five people, so it's not too much for the kind
of... It's four. It's four, including me.
Four and you.
And me, yes. And then we have a sound engineer who I think is a very, very, very important part of the band.
Well, I heard a live tape from the VFW in Nantucket, is it?
Uh-huh.
And there was a dub on that.
The dub on Terrestrial Spirits, yeah.
Yeah, and it's... I guess the sound guy must have been really on the ball for that one.
Oh, yeah. We were into it. Actually, it was just kind of a spontaneous kind of thing.
Oh, that wasn't something that was planned?
We're
going to have to play that, and we'll have to grab that tape. I'll get that tape, but we'll play that in a moment. But first, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
It was Terrestrial Spirits. We played that song earlier.
Uh-huh.
And this part, the dub part of that song.
The dub version, yeah. Extended version.
And it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's just the drum effects and the guitar effects, and it's all live. Usually that's done in the studio. Stuff like that is not attempted live, but
yeah, we kind of. I think my theory is if it sounds good live, if it comes out good through the speakers live, and you record, it will sound good. You know, it should sound good.
How about we play another song from the new album?
All right, what are you gonna do?
We'll play Hitchin' a Ride.
Oh, that's a good one.
I like
it. Yeah, Hitchin' a Ride on the Moon Splash.
Like, see, everybody, it's the 16th of January in Anguilla. If you can be there, if you can catch a plane, hitch a ride down to Anguilla, Sandy Island.
Moon Splash is a great thing.
We're going to try to bring it up here, though, confidentially. I haven't really talked to anybody about it. I guess it's something we have to get the okay with the city about.
Wouldn't that be great?
We could bring a bunch of bands, bring you guys up here, and maybe do it down on the Esplanade or something like that.
Oh, that'd be great.
Maybe a full moon in August.
Uh-huh. I think summertime. That sounds like a good thing.
I think I'm slipping into a smoky dream here, man. Let's get to the music. It's Hitchin' a Ride, Banky Banks, again, and it's always a pleasure to see you. We're talking about you all the time on the air, like you're our best friends here.
Oh, great.
I hope we're close here.
Peace and love to all the people out there. We love you.